God has a special purpose, a special love, a special providence for all those He has created. God cares for each of us. The circumstances of each day of our lives, of every moment of every day, are provided for us by Him. But maybe we are all just a little afraid to accept this truth in all of its shattering simplicity, for its consequences in our lives are both terrible and wonderful. The man who wrote those words might well be described as a defender of faith through his own trust in God, a trust in God that really was put to the test for 23 years behind the Iron Curtain, enduring all kinds of tortures and a lifestyle that, with no exaggeration, very few human beings could endure. He was a Jesuit priest. His name was Father Walter J. Chizik. And some decades ago, he told the world his story in a marvelous book called With God in Russia. Father Chizik was born in Shenandoah, Pennsylvania, on the 4th of November, 1904. It was in that town that he spent his childhood. He went to parochial school and grew up. His parents, by his own admission, were of peasant stock. They were Polish immigrants who had come to Pennsylvania in the late 19th century, and his father was a miner. From his father, he got his toughness. From his mother, he got his strong Catholic faith. "I was a bully," he writes, "a leader of a gang, a street fighter, and most of the fights I picked on purpose, just for devilment. I had no use for school, except insofar as it had a playground where I could fight, or wrestle, or play sports, any sport." But be all that as it may, by the time he finished the eighth grade, he was very, very determined that he wanted to study for the priesthood. He writes, "My father refused to believe it. Priests in his eyes were holy men of God. I was anything but that." Well, he would not let go of that determination. And after he finished the eighth grade, he entered the seminary at St. Cyril and Methodius Seminary in Orchard Lake, Michigan, where he studied for a while. And while he was there, just for 1 year actually, he read the biography of that marvelous Polish Jesuit, St. Stanislaus Kostka. He was very, very inspired by his strength of will and character, his determination. His family did not want him to enter the Jesuits, but he walked. He literally walked from Warsaw to Rome to enter the Jesuits. And Father Chizik said, "That is the life that I want." And he returned home after a year at Orchard Lake, and he said that he wanted to be a Jesuit. Now, his father would hear nothing of it. He said, "No, you're going back to Orchard Lake if you want to be a priest." And there was an argument between the father and the son back and forth. And finally, the son won out, and he did enter the Jesuits, the Jesuit novitiate, at St. Andrews on Hudson, near Poughkeepsie, New York. He went there in the fall of 1928. So he was on his way then, studying for the Jesuits, and it was indeed going to be his life career. He had not been in the Jesuit novitiate for 6 months. Then one evening, the novice master was reading at dinner a letter that had been sent from Pope Pius XI to seminarians all over the world, but especially to my Jesuit sons, the Holy Father said. And he was talking about the fact that he intended to establish a special college in the city of Rome, which would be called the Russicum, the Russian College, for the training of priests who ultimately would go and serve as missionaries in Russia. The Holy Father began talking about the terrible tortures that missionaries were going through, the torments of the church, whether it be the Catholic Church or the Orthodox Church, how the forces of atheistic, godless communism were not only were rising, but indeed had risen in Russia, and how the church was terribly suffering, and how the church was so terribly, terribly in need of missionaries. And when young Walter Chizik heard that in the novitiate on that particular evening, he knew very, very well that Russia would be his destination as a priest. Well, from St. Andrews on Hudson, this young man was sent with the first class of novices to the new Jesuit novitiate for what was then the Maryland, New York province. located in Wernersville, which is near Reading in the state of Pennsylvania. And for 2 years there, he remained taking his studies in the humanities, which the Jesuits then called the juniorate. Wernersville, Pennsylvania was followed by Woodstock, Maryland, where he took his philosophical studies, and then off to the eternal city of Rome to work at the Russian College to study theology and indeed ultimately to be ordained to the priesthood. I sailed for Rome that summer of 1934, he writes, a very happy young man. Well, ordination to the priesthood would follow in June of 1937. And as is the case with all of the students who were ordained at the Russicum, at the Russian College, Father Chizik was ordained to say Mass in the Oriental Rite. But he also had permission, of course, to always say Mass in the Latin Rite wherever necessary. He'd studied for many years to be a priest, and he always had the goal of going to Russia, but his first assignment was going to be a bit of a disappointment to him because he was sent to Poland. He was sent to Alberton, Poland, to the Jesuit mission, where his Jesuit superiors told him, "We have absolute need of you." Father Chizik was, of course, of Polish descent, and it was considered very, very logical that he go to Poland and that he exercise his priesthood there where there was a great need for Jesuits. So he arrived in Poland, but all was not going to be well in Poland for very long. On the 1st of September 1939, Hitler invaded Poland, and of course in a matter of days, German troops had surrounded the city of Warsaw. The city was bombarded, and it looked as though, and indeed what did happen, as we know, was the forces of Hitler would obviously invade the country. Now, Father Chizik was of Polish descent, but he was not a Polish citizen. He was rather an American citizen, and that is why the Society of Jesus felt it more opportune to keep Father Chizik in Poland, in the city of Alberton, as superior of the Jesuit mission. And so he would remain there until the spring of 1940. Actually, it was the Feast of St. Joseph, the 19th of March, 1940, that he finally was able to leave Poland and to start to fulfill his lifelong dream of becoming a missionary in Russia. He went into Russia with a fellow Jesuit, and he went in carrying a Polish passport. It would have been very, very difficult to go in carrying an American passport. So he had a Polish passport, and he assumed a new identity. "I became Vladimir Lipinski," he writes, "a Pole and a widower whose family had been killed in a German air raid in Warsaw." The train ride into Russia was very long and very arduous. He was going, of course, to work in a lumber camp in the Ural Mountains, and he arrived there finally in the lumber camp. Father Chizik did, alias Vladimir Lipinski, worked in the lumber camp for a short while, applied for a job as a truck driver in the lumber camp, and got the job as a truck driver, and he struck up a number of friendships with many of the workers in the lumber camp, many of whom, by the way, were Catholics, and he would offer Holy Mass for them clandestinely whenever he could. The thing that fascinated Father Chizik most about the people he met in the lumber camp were the number of teenagers, the number of young Russian people he met. It got out sooner or later that he was a priest. And when the young Russian teenagers found this out, they were very, very anxious to engage him in discussion about religion. And this is what Father Chizik wrote. He said, "I found the teenagers tremendously interested in religion. They heard it discussed and ridiculed much in school, and they wanted to know much more. Under the pretext of picking mushrooms or huckleberries, we would arrange meetings in the forest after work at night. There, behind a hillock or in some sunken spa, we would talk for hours about God and man's relationship to God and to his fellow man. They were full of questions, eager to learn. Yet at the end of such a session, they would make me promise not to tell anyone what we had talked about. And we would return to the camp by different paths." They were very, very scared, as well they should have been in Russia in those days. Well, this work in the lumber camp was going to end very abruptly in June of 1941, when the Soviet secret police invaded the lumber camp barracks at 3 a.m. one morning, held their prisoners at gunpoint, searched the room, and finally began transporting the prisoners out of the lumber camp and to prison. Father Chizik was taken, and he was held first at the juvenile home at Chusovoy, and later he was moved to a prison in a Russian town called Perm. It was here that a long series of interrogations began, of the sort really that would make lesser men despair. It's very interesting now to listen to Father Chizik's own description of what happened to him in the prison at Perm in Russia. Sometimes I'd be called out twice a day, sometimes not at all. The sessions might last anywhere from an hour to all day. The questions were always the same. Sometimes I'd have to sit bolt upright on the edge of the chair for half an hour. And sometimes if the interrogator did not like an answer, he would give me a blow to the face that would send me sprawling on the floor. Two or three times in the months I was at Perm, the interrogator summoned a pair of guards and led me into an adjoining room with thick carpets on the floor and heavily padded walls. There I would be worked over with rubber clubs on the back of my head. And when I tried to drop my head, I'd get a smashing blow to the face. Several times, too, I was put into a small black room like a box, so pitch dark I literally could not see my hand in front of my face. And it was stifling hot. I might be there for an hour, or I might be there overnight. I was told to think over the questions and my answers and decide whether or not I might be able to remember a few more details of the truth. What a remarkable man to even endure such a thing. It became evident through all of this that the interrogators, the people who were asking Father Chizik the questions, knew, first of all, that he was an American priest. They also knew that he was a Jesuit who had studied in Rome, and they knew that he had crossed into Russia with a Polish passport. They kept insisting that he was a German spy and that perhaps the Vatican was behind all of his activities in Russia. They kept pressing him about the entire affair. They wanted more details. And finally, they took him from Perm, and they brought him to yet another prison. The prison they would take him to was Lubyanka. Lubyanka was, through all the years the communists were in power in Russia, the headquarters of the KGB. It is a large stone building, still there, located right in the heart of Russia. It had formerly been a hotel, and the rooms in it were actually rather large, so in a sense it was quite a relief from the prison that he was at in Perm to go to Lubyanka. Nonetheless, there he was taken by train. I propped my head against the window frame on the train as if I were asleep, and I began to pray. This sort of mental prayer was what had kept me going until now. By means of it, I never lost courage. It reminded me of my reasons for being here, of my resolve, no matter what the consequences, to do whatever I did only for God. He would sustain me. This thought, no matter how lonely I was never alone. This thought gave me courage again now. That's what he was thinking about on the train ride from Perm to the Lubyanka prison in downtown Moscow. Well, as we said, the Lubyanka prison was a bit of a welcome relief. At least he had a larger room, and the rations of food that he was given at the Lubyanka prison were really something fit for a king. He received 3/4 pound of bread, 1.5 cubes of sugar, and 1 cup of boiling water for his breakfast every morning. Lunch would be at noon, supper would be at 6 o'clock. And other than that, you stayed in your room all day except for a brief walk. You were taken out once a day. Now, that routine in the Lubyanka prison went on for Father Chizik for 1 full year. It would drive lesser people crazy, but he endured it. He prayed. He had a very, very regimented daily routine. Finally, he was accused, or rather he was convicted, I should say, of subversive activities, and he was sentenced to 15 years at hard labor. The commissar who had pronounced the sentence asked the prisoner if he were content with the verdict. "I really don't have much choice, do I?" I said. They both found that uproariously funny. Then the commissar said, "You're getting off easy, you know. Since I had, quotes, no complaint, close quotes, he told me to sign the document. According to the date of the verdict, I had signed on July 26, 1942. Now, you would think from there he would immediately be taken from the Lubyanka prison and put into the hard labor that he was assigned to. He wasn't. He was left in the Lubyanka prison with this same routine for 4 more years. Actually, they were not terribly bad years. He said, "These were the years when I obtained my graduate degree at Lubyanka University." Because the prison officials actually allowed him to begin reading literature. He read Dostoevsky, he read the stories of Jack London, he read Shakespeare, he read Charles Dickens, he read Goethe, he read the philosopher Max Schiller. He was really having a good time, if we can call it that, in the Lubyanka University, as he called it. It also gave him time to reflect. "Why the passion?" he writes. "Why? Why pain and suffering? Is God so vindictive that he must inflict pain and suffering on those who follow him? The answer lies not in God's will, but in the world in which we live and in which we try to follow his will. Christ's life and suffering were redemptive. His apostolate in the scheme of salvation was to restore the original order and harmony in all creation that had been destroyed by sin. But Christ's redemptive act did not of itself restore all things. It simply made the work of redemption possible. It began our redemption. It is not the Father, not God, who inflicts suffering upon us, but rather the unredeemed world in which we must labor to do his will, the world in whose redemption we must share." And in an even more poignant vein, Father Chizik continues, "This simple truth, that the sole purpose of man's life on earth is to do the will of God, contains in it riches and resources enough for a lifetime. Once you have learned to live with it uppermost in mind, to see each day and each day's activities in its light, it becomes more than a source of eternal salvation. It becomes a source of joy and happiness here on this earth. The notion that the human will, when it is united with the divine will, can play a part in Christ's work of redeeming all mankind is overpowering." Magnificent words, are they not, written in reflection by a magnificent man? Well, he went finally to Siberia above the Arctic Circle. He went there to work in a coal mine, which I think might more properly be referred to as a slave labor camp. Siberia is freezing cold. Some of the men in the prison camp had to pace back and forth all night. They dare not go to sleep because they thought they would freeze to death. The cold would be coming in through the roof. It would be coming in through the panes in the between the slabs of boards and so forth. Those who did manage to get a little sleep got up in the morning and they were barely able to move. They would go down to the docks, as they were called, early in the morning, and inside a fenced area, there were huge banks of coal waiting to be loaded aboard ships. Now, conveyor belts let it out onto the docks, and the prisoners were all given large coal scoops, and they were told what their quota was going to be to shovel the coal for the day. They had to fill that quota no matter how long it took, and all winter long, coal was brought from the mines inland to be stacked up along the riverbank. The river was open to navigation for only a few months every summer, and so therefore they had to work at a feverish pace all winter to get this coal lined up and placed along the riverbanks. Then, of course, they would often have to go on board ship and start loading the coal themselves, and they would have to go down into the hold of the ship to scatter the coal around to make room for more coal being brought down. As the hole filled up in the ship, he writes, the danger increased. There was no room to move down in that hole, and there was more chance that you might slip on the shifting piles of coal and fall into the paths of the chunks roaring down the chute. When it finally got too bad, we would shout as loud as we could and bang on the deck with our shovels. The conveyor belt would stop for a few minutes. We'd scramble out. Then we would continue distributing the coal from the hatchway. There were a lot of injuries on this job, and everyone hated it. But the work schedule had to be met, and we were quite dispensable. There you go. Back in the barracks, one of the greatest joys for Father Chizik was, of course, being able to say Mass secretly for fellow prisoners. "You cannot explain all this, I know," he writes, to those who do not believe. Yet what a source of sustenance it was to us then. How much it meant to us to have the body and blood of Christ as the food of our spiritual lives in this sacrament of love and joy. The experience was very, very real. You could feel its effects upon your mind and in your heart. These men, with simple and direct faith, grasped this truth and they believed in it. They could not explain it, as a theologian might explain it, but they accepted it and they lived by it. And they were willing to make voluntary sacrifices, even in a life of almost total deprivation, in order to receive the bread of life. They loved the Eucharist that much. They loved the priesthood that much. They flocked around Father Chizik and other priests purely because they loved the priesthood. Well, from that slave labor camp in Siberia, Father Chizik was sent into an even colder and more inland place in Siberia, another coal mine, to do much the same work, but in far, far worse conditions. He began thinking about death and reflecting upon death. It had no particular fear for him. He knew that death was a great joy. Death was something that came to all men. But it certainly gave him time to reflect on that ultimate truth of human death. By the spring of 1945, a young Lithuanian doctor, a very devout Catholic, though in secret, named Janos, began to examine Father Chizik medically at the coal mine in which he was working deep in Siberia. And he told Father Chizik in no uncertain terms, "If you do not get out of here after all of these years, you're not going to survive." Well, Father Chizik said, "I have only 3 more months left of my sentence. Maybe I will be able to fill the thing out, to serve it out." The medical doctor said, "Absolutely no, you're not going to live for 3 more months. Absolutely you will not." And so Father Chizik said, "Well, why don't you tell the authorities about it?" The doctor did. The very next day, he still had heard nothing. The doctor stormed in and said, "You've got to get this man out of here." And finally, they did. Father Chizik left Russia in 1963. 14 years and 9 months of hard labor out of the 23 years that he spent in total in the Soviet Union. He, along with other Americans, were exchanged for a Russian couple being held for espionage in the United States. And upon returning to his native land, Father Chizik was a member of the John the 23rd Center for the Study of Eastern Christianity at Fordham University in New York City. He wrote his wonderful book, With God in Russia, and some years later, because he thought he had not explored the spiritual dimensions of that journey as well as he might have, he, in company with a fellow Jesuit, Father Daniel Flaherty, wrote another magnificent book, spiritually reflecting on all of this, which is entitled, He Leadeth Me. With God in Russia and He Leadeth Me, both to be very, very highly recommended. Father Chizik in later years became a nationally known expert on Ignatian spirituality, the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius Loyola. "I was brought to make this perfect act of faith," he writes, "this act of complete self-abandonment to his will and of total trust in his love and concern for me and his desire to sustain and protect me. I knew I could no longer trust myself, and it seemed only sensible then to trust totally in God. I had talked of trusting him. Indeed, I truly had trusted him, but never in the sense of abandoning all other sources of support and relying on his grace alone." Well, he did abandon all other sources of support, and for 23 years in the Soviet Union, he relied on God's grace alone. His cause for beatification is being studied. Please God, it will come about.